I've been very blessed by all the preaching and singing, and I want to thank Dr. Getch and just such an incredible message. How many of y'all have ever read a passage and then you said, how'd I miss that? Okay. Thank you, Dr. Getch. You touched our hearts profoundly. And Bruce, I love this man's music because it comes right from the heart to the heart. Please get his music for your home and your automobile. Every one of them has a heartfelt, I love this man. Turn in your Bibles, please, to the book of Mark, chapter 11. Jesus is in his last week of life on this earth. He's on the way to Calvary. It's day three. And he's about to teach his followers and his disciples how to pray. Now, they've not been real successful so far. And when the disciples go with him to pray, they keep falling asleep. They can't even last an hour. And later on, when they couldn't go with him through the night, they went fishing all night. But God's going to give them some instruction here that's going to change everything. Let me tell you what the instruction says, and then we'll read it. God says to you and to me, if we will do two things, we can do the impossible through prayer. Not great things, not awesome things, impossible things. But we got to do the two things. And he calls it mountain moving. Now, when he talked about moving mountains through prayer, he wasn't talking about changing the topography of an area. He wasn't talking about taking the Rockies and moving them to Florida. Mountain moving was the term they used when something was absolutely ridiculously impossible. It couldn't even be comprehended. We still use this term. I'm under a mountain of debt right now. I got a mountain of health problems. I got a mountain of worry and fear for my family or my marriage. We use the term mountain to mean something insurmountable. And God says, I'm going to tell you how to change all of that. Now read with me, starting in Mark chapter 11. We're going to start at verse 22. And Jesus answering saith unto them, have faith in God. Now underline those words, have faith in God. This is where it all starts. Be careful. It's not the faith you have in your prayer. It's the faith you have in God that makes your prayer something. I've heard people of certain persuasions, especially in charismatic persuasions, where they want to say, well, it's your prayer that does it. No, it's your God that does it. Prayer is what activates what God wants to do. Have faith in God. For verily I say unto you, that whosoever shall say unto this mountain, be thou removed, and be thou cast into the sea, and shall not doubt in his heart. I love that part. But shall believe that those things which he saith shall come to pass, he shall have whatsoever he saith. Well, Brother Gibbs, man, I realize that, but that's in the Bible. But I suppose Dr. Getch could do it. And maybe someone or two else here. And please note what he said, whosoever shall say. That's the same word that's whosoever shall will may come. This is you, this is me. But he says you got to do two things. Number one, you got to ask, and you got to do it in faith believing. Look at the next verse. Therefore I say unto you, whatsoever things you desire when you pray, believe that you receive them, and ye shall have them. How good are you at asking? How good are you, my friend, at absolutely having God move mountains in your life? Now, we know from Scripture that God does the impossible. Matthew 19, verse 26, with men it is impossible, but with God all things are possible. The book of Mark, chapter 9, verse 23, if thou canst believe, all things are possible to him that believeth. Mark chapter 10, 27, with men it is impossible, but not with God. For with God all things are possible. Luke 18, 27, the things which are impossible with men are possible with God. Why does the Lord keep repeating this and repeating this? Because with man it's impossible, but never with God. But he says, if you're going to move mountains, there's two keys. Number one, you have to ask. And then number two, you have to do it in faith, believing. What are you asking for? Can I tell you where I think the devil traps most of us? We don't even ask. We don't get the ask out. If I were to say, show me your prayer list right now, what are you asking God for that's impossible? What's on your prayer list? Lester Roloff. How many of you know the name Lester Roloff? We were in the middle of a trial. I had the privilege to do 14 jury trials for that precious man. I'm in his room one day, and he's got papers on the bed and on the floor and on the table and on the dresser. And I said, Brother Roloff, are these papers for the trial? He said, No. He said, that's my prayer list. I said, that's your prayer list? He said, yeah. He said, David, how'd you get comfortable asking God for so little? I said, I don't know. Up until right then, I didn't realize I had. That's a great question. How did you and I get comfortable asking God for so little mercy? Now, what I'm about to tell you is not in the Bible. Would good if it were, but it isn't. Would be wonderful if the Bible says as a child of God, you get 10 mountain-moving asks. 10 miracle asks. Not 11, 10. Choose carefully. That's not what it says. Do you know what the limit is in the Bible? There is no limit. The limit is in you failing to ask. Ask in faith, believing. A young evangelist called my dad. He said, I've just come into town, and he said, I have a tent that I'm going to put up for a revival meeting. And he said, I understand you have semi-trucks. And my dad said, I have a number of them, yeah. He said, well, my trucks are so shot they can't pull the tent up. And I understand you're a Christian. Could you bring about 10 of your trucks out and help me pull this tent up? My dad said, sure, I can do that. Well, I was just a kid, maybe 9, 8 years old. Anytime I could hop in one of those trucks to go somewhere, I just loved to ride in them. So we went out to where they had this tent all laid out on the ground, and boy, there it was, big, big tent. And this was a young evangelist. I don't think he was 20. And my dad got out and looked at his tent, walked around, and he said, young man, I don't want to tell you this, but your tent is shot. Do you realize how much of that tent is not tent, but is patch? And he said, no, you're right, you're right. He said, I got more patch than tent. My dad said, well, we try to pull that up, we'll shred it in a million pieces. He said, no, you're right, Mr. Gibbs, you're right, except I'm going to ask God to move the mountain. That's the first time I ever heard anybody use that phrase. Has anybody ever heard you use it? He said, hook your trucks up, but don't pull. Because he said, you pull, you'll shred it, it'll never recover. But he said, I'm going to go over here and get on my face with God, and I'm going to ask God to let us get this tent up. I got to have this for his glory. And he walked over about 30 feet from us, got down on that field, and started crying out to God. Now, my dad's truck drivers came over and said, what's he doing? And he said, well, he's asking God for the impossible. I remember the one driver said, well, he's going to need it. This tent is shot. But they stood there watching him and listening to him. Has anybody ever heard you put your faith on the line? Or are you too cautious? After about 20 minutes, Dr. Getchy walked back by us and he said, okay, hook it up and pull. My dad said, now, young man, we'll do this, but I don't want you mad if we destroy it. He said, no, no, do it. Boy, those trucks started pulling. I'll still remember the noises, creaking and groaning. That tent made noises I didn't think anything could make. But finally up it went. They got it all the way up. They staked it all off. My dad's drivers came back and said, I don't know what to say. That's a miracle. There's no way humanly possible that we could do that with that tent. My dad went to that young evangelist and he said, young man, he said, no question, God answered your prayer. But he said, I just want to tell you, I think we better raise some money and get you a new tent. He said, nope, this is the last time I'm using it. Going to use it for 2 weeks and it's done. He said, I've just rented a movie auditorium here that holds 60 people, rat-infested movie place. And my local church is going to help me start a church here. And he said, this will be the last I use the tent. My dad said, well, good for you. We're about to walk away. And he said, Mr. Gibbs, you could help me pray for something. My dad said, what, young man? He said, I'm asking God to let me put the gospel on television. My dad said, you want to do what now? He said, I want to put the gospel on television, the Romans Road on television. Now, this is in the early 50s when TV was in its infancy. If you lived in a big town, you had three stations, but most of them weren't on very long. And how many of you remember the TVs that were all the white snow? How many of you remember all of that? And how many of you remember we put the kids up there holding the rabbit ears for better reception? And when the kids would hold it, your teeth would vibrate. We were nuking them at the same time. There was no Christian television. There was no internet. There was no cable. Just these stations, few and far between. And he said, I want to put the Romans Road on television. He said, America's dying and going to hell. They need to hear the Romans Road. My dad said, that'd be something. He said, young man, you have some experience at doing something like this? He said, no, sir, I got no experience. My dad said, well, do you have educational credentials, training? He said, no, never got to graduate from high school. He said, my dad died and I had to go to work to feed my mom, my brothers, my sister. So I never got to graduate. My dad said, you got any money? He said, Mr. Gibbs, if I had money, I'd have a new tent. He said, no, I have no money. My dad said, just between you and me, what makes you think you're going to put the gospel on television? He said, because I asked. Do you have any idea how powerful it is when you ask God to move mountains? On the way home in that truck, I turned to my dad, Bruce, and I said, Dad, you think he's going to put the gospel on television? My dad said, son, I don't know, but I'm telling you one thing. He asked, and that mountain went up, that tent. And when you ask, God does move mountains. What mountains can you point to, can I point to, and say, God did that because I asked in faith, believing. He started his new little church. It was a terrible thing. They was so rat-infested, they had to tell people during the services, please keep your feet up on the chair in front of you because these rats would run by and scare everybody. The next Saturday, he went up to the local TV station, and the manager there, he said, I want you to let me have 10 minutes to give the Romans Road on television so people don't die and go to hell. He said, you got money? He said, I got no money. He said, young man, why would I put you on for free when I got people standing in line with money and I don't have time to sell them? Why would I do that? He said, because I asked. He said, you asked too. He said, I asked God. He said, you ask God. He said, I've never heard anybody say that before. Isn't that something? He said, I'm not going to put you on, but he said, that's something that you think you got God on your side. Now get out of here. Next week he went back. Guy did the same thing. He said, you got any money? He said, no. He said, you're still asking? He said, yeah. And this time he cussed him out and said, get out of here. Came back the third week. Now the guy was abusive. He said, look, you're a slow learner. I'm not putting you on. So he's walking off the property, and a lady sitting there at a desk, a secretary, said, can I ask you a question? He said, sure. She said, this Romans Road, the gospel you talk about, does it make a difference in whether you go to heaven or hell? And he said, that's exactly what it does, man. Exactly what it does. She said, well, my sister's dying. She's only got a couple days to live. Could you come give your Romans Road to my sister so she could go to heaven instead of hell? He said, I'd be glad to. She said, good, get in your car and follow my car. Well, they started driving. He's following her. What he didn't realize, the sister lived 300 miles away. He thought it was around the corner or something. Pretty soon he's flashing his lights and they pull over. And he said, look, I tell you this, I have no money. And this is embarrassing. I can't get fuel to get. She said, look, I'll fill you up. You've got to get your Romans Road to my sister. So he followed her and got there. Good thing he did. Half an hour after he was there, gave her the Romans Road. That young sister trusted Christ. 2 days later, she stepped into eternity. They're coming out of the house. And the lady, the secretary, said, what you just did with my sister, is that what you want to put on television? He said, that's exactly what I want to put there. She said, well, next Saturday you come, and I want you to put the Romans Road on that TV station. He said, ma'am, that's awfully kind of you to say that, but that station manager, he keeps cussing me out, and he does not like me at all. She said, I'm aware of that. That's my husband. And she said, here's what you don't know. He don't own the station. I do. She said, I've been watching you, thinking he won't come back. He won't take that abuse. He won't be denigrated like that. But you kept coming back and lovingly re-asking, saying, I'm asking God for this. She said, now your suit is shot. Here's a little money. I want you to get a suit. And you come there next Saturday at 10 o'clock, and you're going to put the Romans Road on television. That's what he did. He gave the Romans Road for 10 minutes, and then he said, if you prayed that sinner's prayer with me, I want you to write this number down and call me. 430 people called and said, I prayed that with you. The next week, the number doubled. It was 900 and some. And he'd say, you got to call. We got to get you in a fundamental Bible-believing church. Pretty soon, it was 1,000 and then 2,000. The lady that owned the station, she said, you're not aware of this, but I own two other stations. Next Saturday, you're on three stations. And she said, I know everybody that has a station, and I'm calling all of them. Within 3 years, he was on 2,600 stations. And people would say, how'd you do that? He said, I asked. And my God moved the mountains. Whoa. The guy that didn't have enough power to pull his tent up, Pretty soon, 30,000 people a week were calling and saying, I prayed that prayer, now what? Because one man said, God, you know I'm the wrong guy for this. I don't have any money. I have no educational credentials. I have no experience. But I'm asking, use me. What's on your ask list? What do you want to see God do? Wow. When I was 8, my mother contracted polio. Never walked again. My mom was our church pianist. Conservatory trained, and one morning, 5 a.m. in the morning, we're making breakfast. And she said, run get your dad. I think I'm really sick. And poliospinal meningitis had come to our house. My mom walked into the living room, collapsed, and never walked again. Her body began to convulse violently, violently. Those hands that had been Juilliard trained for music gnawed and started shaking hard, and her eyes rolled back in her head, and blood was pouring out of the corner of her eyes. I'll never forget it. The ambulance came. And they punched a hole in her throat the size of a 50-cent piece to try to help her breathe. I remember the crew saying, we're going to try to get her to the hospital, but I don't think she's going to make it. Say goodbye now. I remember thinking, what do you mean she's not going to make it? When they took my mom out the door, I didn't realize I wouldn't see her for 2.5 years. She lived in an iron lung for 2.5 years. Couldn't walk. Couldn't feed herself, couldn't do anything. Had to have help just to breathe. My sister and I, after 2 years, got to see my mother at the hospital. We couldn't be by her because of the contagion, but we got to look at her through a window. I remember standing there with my sister, and they wheeled my mom's iron lung up. And there were speakers on both sides so we could hear her, and I heard her say, would you please turn my head? I want to see my kids. And I got mad. I thought, Lord, you took her hands, you took her legs, she can't breathe, you could have left her neck. What are you doing, God? When they turned her head, she was in agony. But little did I know she was about to change my life forever. Finally, when she could speak again, she looked at me and she didn't say hi. She didn't say hello. She said, Davy, don't you think that? I said, don't think what, Mom? She said, son, this isn't what I planned, but the Bible says he's doing all things well. None of this is a mistake, son. This is his plan for my life. When life puts a squeeze on you, what do the kids here come out of you? They'll never forget what you say. It'll weld to their souls. Another year she got to come home. She's in a wheelchair. Can't hold her head up. She can't do anything. We had family devotion that first night. When it came her turn, we all said what we wanted God to do. And she said, Lord, give me something to do. And then she said this, you know I'm very damaged goods. Who'd want me? But I still have breath. Give me something to do. And I remember thinking, boy, we've been down that road, Mom. The new pastor was in town. He came to see us, and My mom said, would you just pray, God, give me something to do? Our home pastor had asked us not to come back. The people were too afraid of the polio. And he told my mother, he said, Mrs. Gibbs, you just need to realize God's through with you. Don't you ever say that to somebody. As long as you have breath, God's not through with you. Not through. This new pastor, my mom said, would you pray, God, give me something to do? And he got right down on our carpet and started praying. And he said, you know, Mrs. Gibbs, I have a thought. He said, we're going to start our new church in 3 weeks. And he said, we don't have any kids yet because we don't have a church yet. But when we do, could you run the Sunday school from your wheelchair? My mom said, sure. He said, okay, then you got it. He walked out, and my mom said, God answered my prayer. I asked for something. He gave me something. I said, Mom, how are you? I don't want to discourage you, but how? Well, that first Sunday in that Sunday school, there am I with my sister, and she's teaching a Sunday school lesson to us like there's 1,000 kids there. After about a month, my mom said, we got to get more kids. And she said, I know what we're going to do. Your granddad with the trucks used to pick up kids, put them on the back of the trucks and take them to Sunday school. They called them the truck kids. She said, there's a big bus company uptown. We're going to go get a bus. I said, Mom, you realize we have no money. This was before the government would cover these things. Our family was bankrupt 1,000 times over paying all the medical bills. She said, I know he'll just have to give it to us. But I'm going to ask God to give me a bus. I took my mom up to see the bus company. We parked our car right up next to the building. And I was getting my mom out to put her in her wheelchair and I dropped her. I don't know if you've ever tried to help somebody who can't hang on to you at all. But she slid right through my hands and she crashed down into the snow and ice and screamed. I'm on the ground, she's on the ground, we're both crying uncontrollably. I would never hurt my mother, never. Finally, I said, Mom, let's go home. She said, no, don't move me, I'll pass out. You can't move me, son. I don't want to faint. You got to let me get okay. Then you're going to get me in that wheelchair and you're going to dry my face. I don't want them to see I was crying. And we're going to go get the bus I've asked for. You know how powerful an ask is. But you got to ask in faith, believing. Now, it doesn't take much. Jesus said, if you've got faith as a grain of mustard seed, and boy, jot down Matthew 17, verse 20. That mustard seed, Brother John, was the smallest seed you could see with the eye. You know how small a mustard seed is? They show you mustard seed kernels on jewelry and that. That's not a mustard seed, that's a kernel. A mustard seed, it takes 17 to 22,000 of them to weigh an ounce. And he said, if you got one as a grain, one grain of mustard seed, that's enough faith. I took my mom into the bus company, nice young lady there. And my mom said, I've come so you can give us a bus. And she said, you mean you want to rent one, buy one, lease one? She said, no. I need you to give it so I can get kids to Sunday school. She said, well, I don't think we've ever done that, but let me get somebody down here to talk to you. Called the vice president. The lady needs you to give her a bus to take kids to Sunday school. He said, tell her no, we've never done it, we're not starting today. Tell her no. That little girl said, you come tell her she's in a wheelchair. You come do it. That's what she said. Guy came down, nice guy, abrupt. He said, lady, you're not getting a bus. No, 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 no. My mom said, well, I got a question. Do you own the buses? And I'm there and I'm thinking, good question, Mom. He said, no, I don't own them. The owner owns them. She said, well, you can't give them to me. They're not yours. I got to talk to the owner. That little girl, she said, he acts like he owns them, but he don't own them. Let me get the owner down here. And she called the president. And down he came. He said, lady, I don't know what to do with you. He said, I'm telling you right now, I'm not giving you a bus. But you parked your car right under my office window. When you fell and hit the ground, I saw it. I watched you weep uncontrollably in pain. I never saw a bus mean that much to somebody. I don't know what to do with you. My mom said, I appreciate that. But she said, please hear me. God is going to be awfully upset with you if you don't give me a bus. He said, wow. He said, lady, if I give you a bus, who'd drive it? You? She said, you're right, I forgot. I need a bus and a driver. He said, lady, I don't know why, but I'm going to do it. One Sunday, that's it, one. One bus, one driver, one Sunday. That's it. And you got to promise me God's going to know about it. She said, I'll be sure I tell him. I did not believe this. She got a bus. My mom said, don't touch my wheelchair yet. She said, I really need two buses. One for each side of town, east and west. He said, okay, lady, one Sunday, two buses, two drivers, but you'd be dead sure God knows about this, okay? And my mom said, I'll do that. He only gave us two buses, two drivers one Sunday, because the next Sunday he gave us three. And within a month it was 10. And within 3 months, it was 55 to 60 buses and drivers every Sunday. The Sunday school with no kids never had less than 4,000 to 5,000 children in it. And it was all run by a lady who couldn't dress herself, who couldn't do anything except ask and pray. Whoa. Every Sunday, she'd have me push her wheelchair down to where those drivers were, and she'd say, now put out your cigarette, you're going to church. And those drivers would say, no, ma'am, we're not doing that. And she'd say, yes, you are. Now follow me or the Lord's going to get you. And like little ducks, they'd follow her in. Within 3 years' time, every driver in that business was saved. That president, that vice president, that secretary was saved. Because one lady said, God, give me a bus. What's on your list? Impossible mountain moving. Whoa. When my mom went home to be with the Lord, Brother Getch, that church sent some folks down and they said, these are the best numbers we have. There is right now in the pulpit pastors preaching in excess of 160 that got saved riding your buses. Missionaries on the field, almost 300 who got saved riding your buses. Because one lady said, I'm very damaged goods. So don't put faith in me, but put faith in God. I asked. My dad got his 80th birthday, and I said, Dad, what do you want for your 80th birthday? He said, you remember that young evangelist that we helped with his tent? I said, yeah. He said, would you see if you could find him, have him come for my 80th birthday party? I said, I'll try. I found him. Here we are in Florida, and he's in California. I said, I don't know if you remember me or not. He said, oh, I remember you. He said, you were the little kid. They all called Little Gibbs. That's a little gives in a little anymore. I said, would you come to my dad's birthday? He said, I would. He came. What a day they had. They sang. They talked about all the people that got saved. All the impossible things God did. I was going to pick him up the next morning at 7:30. I said, now don't be late. I'm there about 40 minutes ahead to pick him up at his hotel. I can't find him anywhere. He's not in the coffee shops. He's not in the restaurant. He's not in his room. I mean, I walked all over that place 3 times. Finally, I'm walking around asking people, have you seen anybody? He carries a Bible. You didn't see. And one of the folks that was in charge of parking cars, one of the valets said, yeah, there was a guy here with a Bible. I said, where is he? They said, well, you're not going to believe this, but 3 buses pulled up. And these all belong to a Fortune 100 company. They're here for a big meeting today. And they were unloading the buses. And that guy with the Bible walked up to him and said, are you here for the meeting? And they all said, yeah. And he said, well, follow me. And he led 3 buses of men down 2 halls, and they're in a big conference room way down there at the end. That's where you'll find them. I said, I can't imagine that. I walked down there. Here he is with men on their knees everywhere. Dozens of them sobbing. I walked in. I said, what happened? He said, I told God that before I leave, I wanted to win some men to Christ. And I asked in faith, believing, do not let me leave here without reaching them. And he said, I no sooner prayed that prayer and these buses pulled up. And they said, they're here for the big meeting. And they just didn't know which big meeting. He never met any of them. But before he was done, 120 men were on their knees asking Jesus to save them. You say, Brother Gibbs, nothing like that happens to me. You haven't asked. You have not because you asked not. Whoa. I want to close by reminding you there's only 2 times that God does not answer your prayer. 2 times. Number one is if you ask selfish. You ask and receive not because you ask amiss that you may consume it on your own lust. I just want to be a gajillionaire. I just want this. And God says, you're just acting selfish. Stop it. God's never going to pattern your pride by giving you what you're praying for. The second time is if it's against his will. He loves you too much. He loves all of us too much to give us anything that's not in our best interest. But other than that, he said, ask for the desires of your heart and ye shall have. I don't know what the desire of your heart is, but I know this. My God's looking for somebody to ask. Somebody who's going to take him at his word. Going home with my mom in the car, how'd she do that? She said, you don't get it, David. I didn't. God did. I just had the breath. And so I asked. Preacher, how'd you get all those men down there? He said, I asked. The devil has nothing to fear until we start asking. And then he's defeated in its entirety. Ask, and ye shall receive. Bow your heads in prayer.